It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In the 95 years since the passage of the 19th Amendment, women have not only earned the right to vote, but have been consistently outvoting men in elections. While the trend is significant, no woman has held the nation's top office, and only 19% of the Pennsylvania legislature is made up of women. So, on the eve of Women's Equality Day in America, how can more women be encouraged to engage in politics? I'm joined now in our studio by Dana Brown, who is Executive Director of Chatham University's Pennsylvania Center for Women and Politics. She's helping to organize Chatham's celebration of Women's Equality Day tomorrow. And Dana Brown, it's good to see you. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Welcome back.
Yeah, very happy to be back.
You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. What do you think is the best way forward for women in politics, particularly in Pennsylvania, which certainly, when you look at the breakdown in the legislature, is far behind many other states in the United States? And Dana, you said that your event tomorrow is meant to raise awareness of the 19th Amendment. What is it that you find that most people don't know or maybe don't appreciate about the struggle, this incredible, 70-year struggle that women had beginning in the mid-19th century to get to the point in 1920 where they had the right to vote?
Right. So we are welcoming students back all this week at Chatham University, as many other colleges are. And so what we're trying to do at the center in Chatham is to raise awareness and consciousness about the history and the struggles that women and men both went through to get women the right to vote. And you're absolutely right. It was a 72-year-long battle that most people seem to identify commencing in 1848 at Seneca Falls Convention up in New York. And that's where we have two women and some men, of course, coming together at this convention to establish a Declaration of Sentiments, which was built to replicate the Declaration of Independence, only to incorporate women and women's voices as part of it. But what's interesting is of that convention, the right to vote was actually the most radical of all of the ideas put forward. So, and it really wasn't put forward until Frederick Douglass supported it at the very end of the convention. So they really were convening about legal rights, married women's rights, property rights, legal economic issues, until that radical idea of women voting came up.
It's so strange to think about it because, you look at the early 20th century, 100 years ago, years before women were granted the right to vote, most, if not all of the teachers in schools, in grade schools, in those old, rural schoolhouses were women. And so you're saying, so society at that time is saying, you can teach the kids, but, we don't want to let you vote.
Right. And possibly if you, would ever think about getting a divorce, men most likely will have access to your children. Like there really wasn't a whole lot of protections for women, gaining access to their children after such an event like a divorce. So that's why, this notion of voting then became so important because women started to realize that it was absolutely essential in order to change the laws on the books, that they needed access to legislators.
But why didn't this happen sooner? Why did it take so long for women to get the right to vote?
Gosh, so we start the clock really in 1848, like I said, and then there's a little thing called the Civil War that happens. And so all of these women and men who were engaged in the movement start diverting their attention to the Civil War. And that, you see a bit of a hiatus. And then after the Civil War, with the Civil War amendments, 13th, 14th, and 15th amendments being passed, that's where you see a fracture in the first women's movement. There were a number of women who were, anti-slavery, right? And they very much wanted to have black men gain the right to vote. On the other side, there were women who, again, wanted that 15th Amendment, but wanted to be sure and clear that the Constitution did not discriminate based on sex. So the 15th Amendment really does include race and color in its language, but sex is not there. So we see then the possibility that discrimination based on sex may constitutionally be allowable. And so it's that 15th Amendment that you see these two movements, or the women's movement, really fracture. And then as it goes on, you see a more radicalized movement on the one hand, where we have pickets and parades, and then on the other, a state-by-state strategy, if you will, that's tended to be a bit more conservative. And that organization would go state by state and argue for the women's right to vote, and the other used, you know, means of protest and civil disobedience to gain public attention for a federal amendment, with the 19th Amendment.
And who were these suffragettes? Who were the people? I mean, we all know about Susan B. Anthony, the famous, you know, a lot of us learned about it from the famous Walter Cronkite-hosted episode of You Were There, where they reenacted her taking a man's name in order to register to vote, and then when they discover her true identity, they fine her, and she stands up in court and gives the famous speech, "I will not pay $1 toward this."
And she did not.
And no, she did not.
She did not. So these suffragists were largely originally activists in the anti-slavery movement. That's where they learned a lot of techniques and worked alongside men. Particularly here in Pennsylvania, we know a lot of them were Quakers. The Quaker religion was really supportive of women actually going out into communities and speaking. That religion in particular had a bit more equality, if you will, in terms of you know, male and females getting access to certain things within the religion. So the Quakers themselves were really supportive of anti-slavery, and we see women coming out like Lucretia Mott, who was at the 1848 Seneca Falls Convention alongside Elizabeth Cady Stanton.
It's the Central Pittsburgh, and I'm talking with Dana Brown, Executive Director of Chatham University's Pennsylvania Center for Women and Politics, about how Chatham will celebrate Women's Equality Day tomorrow. And you were talking a bit about, you know, the impact of the Quaker Society on this movement. And I'm wondering how it all played out in Pittsburgh in particular.
You know, Pittsburghers, and I will say Chatham University, previously known as the Pennsylvania College for Women, were very active.
All women until this year, right?
That's right. This is the first year, and this is the week it's happening at Chatham. We are inviting and welcoming men, undergraduate men on campus. Certainly, we've had men on campus since 1992 with graduate programs, but this is a historic year for us. But the Pennsylvania College for Women, certainly the students back in the, you know, particularly 1900s, they had their own floats and parades in Pittsburgh in support of suffrage.
So Chatham is historically linked to this.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And in the 95 years now since the passage of the 19th Amendment, is there, as you look at it, obviously there's cause to celebrate, but at the same time, is there the sense that in nearly a century since voting rights were given to women, is there a sense that we should have come a lot farther with this power at our disposal?
Well, certainly political participation in terms of voting alone, women, including women of color, particularly because women of color really got the right to vote, you know, the 1965 Voting Rights Act. I mean, there's, like, let's be clear in one respect that while both white and black women who were involved in the suffrage movement tended to be a bit more middle class, in many parts of the country, even after 1920, women of color were still disenfranchised. But so what's happened is that women really are, as you mentioned in the intro, out voting men. So really since 1980, we see a gender gap in terms of women choosing to register at a much higher numbers.
Right. They're participating, but they're not as many are running for office and not as many are getting elected, certainly not in Pennsylvania at the state level.
No, you're right. So that's the thing. On the one hand, we're women. We are really great voters. On the other hand, some of our political participation stops short, if you will. And there's certainly a lot of room for growth. And that's what the center, you know, at Chatham, what we're really, our mission is to change the face of public leadership in Pennsylvania to make it a bit more diverse and reflective of who we are.
What are your thoughts about as we hear the rumors that, you know, Joe Biden might enter the race and do so on a ticket with potentially Elizabeth Warren, So you'd have one woman running on a ticket as a vice president. You have Hillary Clinton running for president. You have Carly Fiorina running for president as a Republican. So, you know, is there this idea that we're getting very close to finally having a woman president in the United States and that that would be a good thing?
Well, I think the more the merrier. So the more women we have running, the absolute better we are. I think we should be normalizing seeing women on the ticket and on the ballot box. So, yeah, I mean, I think that we are getting closer with each election, at least for the White House.
And, you know, I had a chance to ask Hillary Clinton in 2008 about why there hasn't been a woman president in the United States. And especially when you see, you know, people like Angela Merkel, who is the Chancellor of Germany. And her explanation was that, well, you have different systems over there and it has to do with majorities in parliament and that kind of thing. Are you buying that?
Well, there are different systems. And so there are different ways in which women come up through the pipeline in politics. But certainly when you take a look at our pipeline to the U.S. presidency, which tends to start in governor's mansions, we do not have a really long, strong history of electing women governors. And so, you know, we as Americans, we like executive experience before executive experience. For those of us who care about putting a woman in the White House, certainly looking at those gubernatorial races, making sure that there are women prepared to run for those top spots is really important for us. So there's that. I mean, we're different culturally. We have different systems. And like I said, historically, presidents come from those governor mansions.
So celebration tomorrow at Chatham. Talk about what you'll be doing here in about 30 seconds or so.
Sure. For our students, we're offering a lot of suffragist-like, buttons and sashes and that kind of thing, and informational booths on Women's Equality Day, because tomorrow is move-in day. Tomorrow's move-in day. So the students will be running in and out of residence halls while we try to raise awareness about Women's Equality Day.
So it just happened to happen on the 95th anniversary, the day of the 95th anniversary of the day.
And it's great. We're welcoming men, too.
Yeah.
Tomorrow on move-in day at Chatham University.
Exactly. So it's going to be a very interesting day on the campus. And Dana Brown, Executive Director of Chatham University's Pennsylvania Center for Women in Politics, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great having you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me back.
Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, we'll look at how the fight against jihadis on their own turf is playing out with Michael Kenny, who is an associate professor of international affairs at the University of Pittsburgh. That's tomorrow on the program. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.